Okay, I've got great pleasure now to introduce Angela Mundy, one of the pharmacists working in Glasgow and Clyde. Angela qualified as a pharmacist just a few years ago, 1981, and has worked as a ward clinical pharmacist in a variety of specialities in different hospitals in Glasgow until 97, then became the Trust Chief Pharmacist at the Inverclyde Royal Hospital. And has been working very closely with the pain management team in Clyde since then. But I've got great pleasure to introduce Angela.
Thank you very much. When I got involved in the chronic pain clinic at Inverclyde Royal Hospital, which was just over 10 years ago, I knew nothing about chronic pain. I knew even less about the neuropathic pain side of things. So when I went to the clinic and saw the sort of drugs that we're using, pharmacists tend to be a cautious breed, for those of you that know us. I went back to do a literature search to see what the evidence was for these drugs, and there wasn't an awful lot at that time. The Oxford Pain Internet website was up and running at that point, and it did indicate that there was some evidence for these drugs, but they also pointed out we needed further studies with longer follow-up, larger numbers of patients, etc. So obviously that was just over 10 years ago. Since then, we've got a whole variety of drugs that we can choose from now. They've got different toxicity profiles, and the newer drugs tend to be more costly. So it's probably a good time to review what the evidence base is. So I can't possibly go through every single drug that we use at the average pain clinic in this presentation. So I'm going to focus on the neuropathic pain side of things, generally because this is usually considered one of the more difficult to treat sort of pain conditions. There's a significant amount of off-label use and some unlicensed use, and as a result of that, there's a lot more need for patient education, because if you don't explain it to the patient and you send them away and they get a supply from the local pharmacy and the leaflet doesn't talk about pain, they don't then take the medication, and that's quite common. We need to titrate because patients are unpredictable as to how they respond both to analgesia and also the side effects, and as I said, initially the evidence base was not that strong. So where do we get our information from? Well, evidence-based medicine, you all know, systematic review, it's been covered this morning, looking at research findings to aid optimal patient care. And the research, again, covered this morning. Drug research comes from a variety of different sets of clinical trials. Phase 1, 2, and 3 have to be undertaken before a drug can get a product license in the UK, and then it becomes generally available for prescribers to use. Phase 4 clinical trials usually occur after the license, just to get a feel for the general population, how they respond, and also longer-term side effects. So we have a variety of randomized and non-randomized controlled trials, cohort studies, case studies, etc., and that again leads to systematic reviews and meta-analysis, again covered this morning. So I won't go through that again. So as the research builds up and the evidence builds up, we get national guidelines. So for neuropathic pain, we now have a variety of guidelines, all of which have been published in the last 2 or 3 years. We have them from Canada, North America, Northern Ireland. We have some elements from the British Pain Society. Royal College of General Practitioners the same. The European neuropathic pain guidelines were updated and published. The review was published last week, which put me into panic mode because I wasn't sure if I was going to have to change my talk. But thankfully, they do reflect a lot of what the NICE guidelines say. I can't go through every single guideline because it would be too boring for you today. But basically, there is a consensus as to which drugs work. The thing that can vary between the guidelines is whether they're first line, second line, third line, or fourth line. And they can contradict each other with that, depending on how they've looked at the evidence and what outcome measures they've looked at. I'm going to focus on NICE today, mainly because they were just produced earlier on this year, and it's the only guideline that's comprehensively looked at cost effectiveness, unlike the others. So before I move on to that, health technology assessments, we've heard about QALYs earlier. Health technology assessments look at not only the safety and efficacy of drugs, which we get through clinical trials anyway, but we also find out whether they actually work in real life. what the cost effectiveness is, the implications to the NHS, legal and ethical considerations, etc. So they're really looking at the big picture, and they're acting as a link between what's published in the literature and what we do in real life and whether it's actually going to be cost effective for us. So it's a bridge between evidence and policy making. There are two bodies in the NHS charged with looking at health technology assessments, and that's the Scottish Medicines Consortium, for Scotland only, and there's NICE, which is National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence. You'll all have heard of that, of course, and that's only mandatory in England and Wales, although obviously from a previous question earlier, things may change with that with Scotland. Usually what happens for drugs is these two bodies make recommendations, and then locally, area drug and therapeutics committees consider these to decide formally status within their boards, whether they need specific audit, closer monitoring, etc. And basically, drugs are not meant to be used in Scotland until SMC have approved them, unless it's for exceptional cases only. I'm going to briefly talk about SMC for the next couple of slides and then focus on NICE, because that's where the guidelines come from. But SMC have obviously made some recommendations regarding some of the drugs we use. So I'll just give you some background to that. It was established 9 years ago. Provides advice to every single NHS board in Scotland on clinical and cost effectiveness, and that's for all new medicines, new formulations and new indications. It doesn't look at drugs before 2001. So, for example, gabapentin, it hasn't looked at. Membership includes members from all the area drug and therapeutics committees in Scotland, health economists, the Association of British Pharmaceutical Industry, public partners, and we also have a chief executive from a board and some finance people as well. The onus is on the pharmaceutical company to submit the information required for SMC to make its decision, and that includes information on qualies that we've heard earlier. It meets on a monthly basis, considers a detail from the company, analyses it, and then produces what's known as a DAD, which is a detailed advice document, which is usually about 4 or 5 pages long, and that is published on their website. So you can go into their website at any time to see what they've done for a drug, how they've recommended it, and the reasons why, and it's fully referenced. As SMC make a decision, that information is transferred to all the NHS boards as well, and they aim to advise within 18 weeks of the company submitting the information. So where you're waiting for SMC advice, it may be that the company hasn't actually submitted the information yet, because they actually work on company information. So bearing in mind 18 weeks, it's quite timely and useful for new drugs. NICE are different because they look at new and existing drugs. They also look at treatments and procedures such as surgical procedures, medical devices, etc. And their process takes up to 2 years. It has very robust methodology. It has extensive stakeholder involvement. Stakeholders are consulted both at the outset of the appraisal and right throughout up until the final draft. And it is a transparent process. However, because of the time lag, it's not always helpful for new drugs. And it also has a query about the cost-effective threshold, as we heard earlier. NICE has never identified a quality above which intervention should not be recommended and below which they should. However, they also state that in general, interventions with a quality of less than 20K are considered to be cost-effective, and above 20K, the need to have exceptional reasons to accept the drug. They argue that QALY is only part of a wider judgment. For example, if you've got someone with a life expectancy of 3 months and a drug is going to give them another 3 months, that's likely to be more significant than a patient who's going to live for 10 years and then gain another 3 months. Also, some of the drugs are not considered cost effective in the general population, but there may be subgroups of patients where they get significant benefit. And in some areas, there are no other treatment options for those patients. So that is where they will use flexibility and will accept higher qualies than the 20K to 30K threshold. So SMC has the same problems. So SMC issues guidance on all new medicines, so it's helpful. It's timely. But as more evidence builds up, the SMC recommendations don't always stand because further evidence is coming out, and that's really where NICE comes into its own, because it's looking at existing drugs and giving advice to England and Wales. It's sort of it is comparable to SINE, and I've checked the SINE programme and there doesn't appear to be any plans to look at pain at this point for this area. So NICE is going to be the most recent. So in general, the NICE guidelines, I've mentioned that some of the different levels of evidence vary between the guidelines, and that's why the guidelines come out with a different sequence of recommendations. NICE guidelines are using GRADE, which is a grading of recommendations, assessment, development, and evaluation, covered by the British Medical Journal, I understand, and that's looking at quality of evidence for all research that's published. It's a system developed by an international working group, and it really appraises recommendations made by the literature. So it's not only looking at study design, but also the quality of the methodology, whether there's a consistency of effect between the different trials, and also whether it's directly relevant to the patient population in which they're going to be used. Additionally, however, over and above GRADE, it's also looking at cost-effectiveness studies. And a health economist is a core member of the guideline group, so they're looking at clinical effectiveness and cost-effectiveness in the form of QALYs. They don't allocate levels of quality of evidence, unlike other guidelines, but what they have done is the strength of evidence is indicated in the wording of the recommendation. Basically, everything that I'm going to cover in the neuropathic guidelines is classed as, if it's in there as a recommendation, it's both clinically effective and it's classed as cost effective. But they use two different terminologies to indicate the strength of the evidence. One of the terminologies is a must word, which doesn't apply to these guidelines. And that's really, they use the word must if there's a legal imperative to do something, or to treat or not to treat could be sort of potentially lethal. But they do use the word offer and could. Now, they use the word offer where they consider the majority of patients, the intervention will do more good than harm and is likely to be cost effective. So it's a should verb, it's quite a strong one. However, where for most patients, more good than harm and cost-effective, but there are alternative options, they use the word could. So if they use should and could, both clinically effective, both cost-effective, but the could, you've got similar options, so it's not quite as strong. So onto the neuropathic guidelines themselves. NICE recognise that it's a difficult condition to treat, and most people require treatment with more than one drug. They do, however, highlight that the choice of drugs in optimal sequence has been unclear to date because the different guidelines have recommended different things. And as a result, particularly in primary care, there's been a considerable variation in practice. They've classed neuropathic pain as a blanket condition unless there's evidence for specific conditions. And the European guidelines that were published last week actually support that. What they say is the evidence is that a drug efficacy in one particular condition can usually translate to another, apart from trigeminal neuralgia and HIV. So the guidelines for pharmacological management of neuropathic pain in non-specialist settings, so why am I talking to you about them today? We're all specialists. It's because they've looked at over 23,000 studies and 34 drugs, and we are using some of these drugs in the specialist clinics. So they've looked at antidepressants, anti-epileptics, opioids, and topicals, and they've looked at off-label use, not just licensed use. SMC can only give advice on license indications. So off-label is out with its remit. And of the 23,000 studies they looked at, 104 met their criteria. And a health technology assessment was carried out for post-herpetic neuralgia and diabetic neuropathy. Of the 23,000 studies, I say only 104 met the criteria, and the criteria they used came from IMPACT. IMPACT is it's a multidisciplinary group, a sort of collaboration between America and Europe to come to a consensus on how clinical trials should be conducted and the outcome measures that they should be looking at. They've come up with some core outcome measures, and NICE have taken some of those on board. The three core ones that NICE have focused on are a measurement of at least 30 and 50% pain reduction. They have to measure a patient-reported global improvement, so that's not only pain relief, but also physical and emotional functioning, side effects, and the ease of taking the medication. And also, they've got to specifically measure side effects. So we know from clinical trials that the drugs work, but how well do they work? And the 50% pain reduction has really been used for NNTs for analgesia. So if a drug has an NNT of 2, you're treating 2 patients in order for one to experience 50% pain relief. NNT is 10, you have to treat 10 patients for one patient to experience 50% pain relief. So the lower the NNT, the better the drug. And for acute pain, you see the range here. High-strength cocodamol, quite a good drug in acute pain. NNT is only 2. Codeine by itself, 60 milligrams at the bottom. We know it's a weak drug by itself, and the NNT is 17. So for acute pain, we acknowledge that the drug is effective, usually within an NNT range of between about 2 and 5. And these are based on single, double-blind studies for moderate to severe pain. So these drugs are classed as effective. So for chronic pain, a summary from NICE with NNTs. Duloxetine, amitriptyline, venlafaxine, and imipramine, NNTs 2 to 4, therefore effective. Pregabalin, 3 to 5, effective. Gabapentin, 4 to 7, not quite so effective. Tramadol, morphine, 5. Oxycodone, unknown, and I'll talk about that a bit later. And lidocaine is a query of 5. And just for completeness, NNHs, that's numbers needed to harm. The higher the number, the better the drug, the safer the drug. And again, they're similar to those drugs used in acute pain. So they are comparable. So we now know that these drugs work. But are they value for money? So basically, I'm just going to go through each of the groups now and give a summary of what NICE have said and why. So of the antidepressants, tricyclics, amitriptyline, imipramine, and nortriptyline, similar efficacy, according to NICE, based on high to moderate quality studies. And they've summarized that you offer amitriptyline as first line. If the patient gets satisfactory pain control and can't tolerate the side effects, then you consider the two alternatives. They use amitriptyline as first line because the most evidence is there and it's more cost effective than the other two tricyclics. Of the impact outcome measures that NICE were looking at, none of the studies met the criteria for lofepramine, trimipramine, dosilipine, or doxepin. So they can't say whether they're clinically effective or cost effective. The outcome measures weren't there. Of the other antidepressants, SNRIs, duloxetine, again, high to moderate quality study. And again, duloxetine is classed as first line, but only for diabetic neuropathy. When you compare it to the other drugs, it's markedly more cost-effective. They don't give the reasons why, but these group of patients seem to respond to duloxetine far better than any other drugs. And it's more cost-effective than amitriptyline. Amitriptyline drug costs are cheaper if you look at the acquisition cost, but the cost-effectiveness overall, duloxetine is superior. Venlafaxine is also classed as clinically effective and cost effective, but they haven't included it in the primary care guidelines purely because it needs specialized monitoring, and that's mainly the cardiotoxicity. So it is on a par with duloxetine, but because of the monitoring, they haven't recommended it in primary care. SSRIs, none of their criteria were met by NICE. Where there is some information, it's relatively limited. NNTs are usually higher than 7. We're aiming for between 2 and 5. And of some of the SSRIs, the evidence is that they do not help in this pain at all. And the classic example is fluoxetine. Again and again, it shows that it doesn't help with pain. So of the antidepressants, amitriptyline and duloxetine are really the two that are first line. So moving on to antiepileptic, pregabalin and gabapentin, again, high to moderate quality studies. However, they've recommended pregabalin as first line, and they've recommended gabapentin not to be used at all in primary care. The reason for that, now when SMC looked at pregabalin a few years ago, it was a third line drug. Now NICE is saying it's first line. Pregabalin is preferred in primary care because the NNTs are a bit lower than gabapentin, but they're only a bit lower. It does have a simpler dosing regime. They're arguing it has a similar pharmacological profile. It does seem to have less side effects. It's been proven to have fewer treatment withdrawals, and it's more cost effective. So they're basically saying, because it has a similar pharmacological profile, use pregabalin. If that doesn't work, don't bother with gabapentin. Now, I think we know in our clinics that patients do respond differently to these two drugs, but we're in specialist clinics. Remember, this is aimed for primary care. But for primary care, they are now recommending gabapentin is not used. NICE have been challenged on this because you'll probably be aware, because it's the same in Scotland, pregabalin is about 3 times the price of gabapentin in drug costs. And the GPs are asking serious questions because their drug budgets are going to go up, particularly in this financial climate where everybody's been looked at and challenged. So England and Wales are particularly concerned because this is mandatory sort of advice for them. So NICE have now agreed to review the health technology assessment for pregabalin and gabapentin. We're waiting for further advice on that. It is imminent, but in the meantime, they are telling primary care, use pregabalin, don't use gabapentin. That's something that was a bit of a surprise. Of the other antiepileptics, lamotrigine, topiramate, and oxcarbazepine, all moderate quality studies, limited evidence, and for topiramate and oxcarbazepine, they also have high withdrawal rates, mainly GI side effects and CNS side effects. Sodium valproate and phenytoin, no studies met the criteria. And for carbamazepine, only one study for trigeminal neuralgia. So these are basically not recommended in primary care because they feel the evidence base is not there and they have not been proven to be cost effective. So moving on to opioids. Cocodamol, codidromol, dihydrocodone and codeine, all strengths, no studies met the criteria, no evidence whatsoever in this sort of type of pain. Tramadol has moderate quality studies to support it, and its offer, so it's a should verb, but only as third line. It's not as cost effective as some of the other drugs, and therefore it's not recommended as a first line or a second line drug, but if it's used as third line, NICE consider it to be likely to be cost effective. And of the strong opioids, primary care are being told not to prescribe them now unless they've been assessed, the patient's been assessed by a specialist clinic. Partly because of lack of evidence, but also partly because of side effects and the risk of addiction tolerance, etc. Morphine has got moderate quality studies to support it, so it is considered to be cost and clinically effective only if a specialist has assess the patient first. So primary care can still prescribe it, but they can't prescribe it without the assessment being carried out. Oxycodone, buprenorphine, fentanyl, again, none of the studies met the NICE criteria, which were based on the impact outcome studies. Moving on to topicals, lidocaine 5% plaster, launched 3 years ago, not accepted by SMC for the first submission, but was finally accepted a year later. SMC restricted its use to its license indication where they were intolerant to first-line drugs or the first-line drugs weren't effective. They restricted its use because the comparative effectiveness with other drugs was very poor. They had one interim analysis with pregabalin, and that was small numbers and very short follow-up. The only reason they let it through was because it was felt that the quality was probably less than 20K, i.e. it was under the threshold. NICE looked at it, and none of the studies met the impact primary care, so the primary outcomes. So I think they struggled with this one. They then looked at other outcomes, and which only had low quality evidence, and that was based on mean change in pain relief from baseline. However, they did acknowledge the fact, obviously from clinical experience, they know it has few side effects. It may be helpful for people that can't take oral medication or are getting side effects from other drugs. And therefore, it was a consider, is a could verb, as third line for localized pain or where you can't take it orally. And because the evidence isn't really there, some of the smaller studies have estimated an NT of about 5, but they're arguing that you need larger studies with more robust outcome measures before that can be confirmed. Capsaicin cream had moderate quality studies, but those studies didn't show any significant improvement over placebo. It tends to be the smaller short-term studies that show the significance, but if you class it as a moderate quality study, there is no benefit, and therefore they couldn't recommend it. The patch, I've just put this in because I thought somebody might ask me a question about it. It wasn't included in NICE because obviously it's only been launched very recently, and NICE came out in March this year. The patch has got 4 phase 3 trials to support its license, but only 2 have been published, so we don't have all of the information yet. Cochrane have undertaken a systematic review and meta-analysis, and they've estimated the NNT is about 12 to provide 30% pain relief. Bearing in mind we were looking at NNTs of between 2 and 5 to provide 50% pain relief. So it doesn't look as if it's probably going to be a first or second line drug. However, it was compared with a sort of low strength patch rather than placebo. So the NNT may be higher, and as we get more evidence, the evidence may become stronger and the NNT may change as a result of that. However, it does cause a number of adverse events, mainly local ones, but over 50% of patients with this patch require rescue analgesia. It's not been considered by SMC yet, but it's in their work program. If you go into the website, they're due to make an announcement in February next year. So SMC will not recommend it unless qualis are available. The qualis have not yet been published, but they should be available by then. And lastly, not touched by NICE at all, but I know there's, particularly because Satifex has been sort of recently launched, I just thought I'd sort of mention these on a couple of slides. There's increased evidence for clinical efficacy for both ketamine and the cannabis derivatives. Satifex is a cannabis-based medicine. It's a spray for spasticity in MS, but it has no benefit in certain types of other pain. It's generally limited published information for both these types of drugs. Sativax only had one phase 3 16-week study, which got it its license. When it first submitted a few years before, the company were told to go away and try again because the evidence just was not there. So this is the second time they've attempted to get a license, and they've only got one study to support that. Most of the studies for ketamine are non-comparative. They're not randomized controlled trials with any sort of significant patient numbers or its case studies. Long-term side effects and tolerance of both these sort of sets of drugs are still unknown because the studies haven't been done. Qualis are unknown for both of them. They both have potentially significant side effects and addiction problems, and therefore they're still classed as last line. So that's not in the NICE, but I just thought I would add that in just for information. So in summary from NICE, drugs that are clinically effective and cost-effective, amitriptyline, imipramine, and nortriptyline, duloxetine and venlafaxine if monitored by a specialist clinic, carbamazepine and pregabalin, morphine if assessed by a specialist clinic, and tramadol and lidocaine are third-line drugs. So NICE looked at 34 drugs, so you're probably asking what's happened to the others. And the left-hand column is a summary of what I've just said. The right-hand column are all the drugs that they've looked at where the evidence just isn't there. So we're not saying that they don't work and they're not cost-effective, but based on the impact primary outcome measures, these studies are not there to support these medicines. The drugs that are in italics is where there are no studies that met the criteria. Those in the non-italics, there are some studies, but the studies weren't powerful enough to give any confidence. So you'll see all of the SSRIs are sort of listed in the right-hand column, and so gabapentin question mark in the right-hand column. So that's clinically effective, but they're arguing it isn't cost-effective. So what do we do about the drugs that we have insufficient evidence or no evidence for? And this really is touching on some of the points that were made this morning about improving how we do clinical trials. And NICE actually recommend that we need longer follow-up, at least 12 weeks. We need to standardize outcome measures, which is what they've tried to do when they've sort of produced these guidelines. We need to standardize the methods we use. We need to look at also not just 30 and 50% pain relief, but other sort of figures. So for example, a patient can have 25% pain relief and that could be significant to them, but we're actually classing that as a treatment failure. So are we actually sort of not being fair on, you know, some of the drug treatments? We need more head-to-head studies rather than comparing with placebo all the time. We need research into combination treatments because, as you know, most of these patients for this type of pain condition usually require more than one drug. We need to look at different types of pain conditions and also look at assessment on quality of life. Now, quality of life was mentioned earlier, and there is a proposal by the Oxford Pain Internet website about looking at the patient-generated index, which I hadn't come from, I hadn't come across this before, so I'll briefly mention that. It basically asks a patient to nominate a number of different areas in their life which has been adversely affected by the pain, and they have to choose the five most important to them. All the others are pulled into a six item. They then have to allocate a score of between 0 and 100, where 0 is the worst they can imagine and 100 is ideal. And they have to give a score in multiples of 10 to all these different areas. The patient is then given 60 points to spend, if you like, to decide which areas are most important to them that they would like to see improvement, but they cannot spend more than 60 points, so they're forced to prioritise. And the argument here is that by doing it this way, we're measuring what's important to the patient, and we're widening the focus on not just looking at pain relief, but all aspects that are affected by pain. There's also some articles about patient decision aids, and what they conclude is outcomes such as pain reduction and improved function cannot be the sole quality indicators. We have to look at how well the treatments that we're offering patients match what is actually important to the patient, and this is just one tool for doing that. The other thing that's coming, and it's imminent, is there's a health technology assessment carried out by NICE for treatment pathways. They're looking at both clinical and cost effectiveness, side effects for the different pharmacological pathways over time. So say, for example, just now, pregabalin or amitriptyline are first-line drugs. If you give pregabalin and then it add in or replace with amitriptyline, who's to say that's better than giving amitriptyline and then adding or replacing with pregabalin? So we've got several different first-line and second-line drugs. So what NICE are looking at is they're looking at the pathways, first, second, third, fourth-line drugs, and actually looking to see what the safety profiles are and what the clinical effectiveness is and the cost effectiveness for diabetic neuropathy, herpetic neuralgia, low back pain, and CRPS. So looking at four different categories, and obviously where they can't recommend, that will identify gaps for further research. This work was commenced 4 years ago, and was due for publication last month, but I think it's been delayed because of the challenge about the pregabalin gabapentin issue, so they've had to go back and revisit that. So I think it may take a bit longer for this to come out, but it'll be useful when it does. I'm sure it will generate some debate. So in summary, do drugs work and are they worth it? Well, chronic pain, multifactorial diseases, we all know, we need a multimodal approach for various reasons. Pain management is any intervention designed to prevent or alleviate pain and its impact. And pain is what the patient says it is, so we need to sort of consider more about how it's affecting them and their lifestyle. We need to sort of work with the patient so they understand what choices they have, what types of treatment are sort of offered to them, and establish realistic goals with them in partnership to try and manage these expectations. So I'd say there is a role for drug treatments because they've been proven to decrease pain, they improve patient global improvement, they've been proven to be cost effective, and they've been recognized by national guidelines based on evidence-based medicine. Thank you.